This podcast is about C.A. Parsons, the company, and what it means to different people. It could mean the turbines, the blades, the ships and turbinia, the fans, the generators, condensers and transformers, or the nuclear power plant and gas turbines. C.A. Parsons also means to a lot of people the memories of working there, completing a full apprenticeship, working in the foundry, operating the massive lathe and the cranes, or travelling all over the world to carry out maintenance in power stations. For local people, the Parsons factory buildings in Heaton stretching from Walker Gate to Chillingham Road, and the old large office block with its grand entrance, also the Long Benton facility in overseas, Parsons in Canada and Parsons in Australia. So it does mean different things to different people. But for me, it was a massive factory that I would occasionally go past in the car. And like Armstrong Vickers or the shipyards and coal mines, it was a business that many of the lads I went to school with ended up working in to go and do their apprenticeship. I never really thought about what went on inside there, though. I was too busy with my own career path at the time. Since getting a job in Siemens, though, 10 years ago, on the site of the original Parsons factory, I've become fascinated by all aspects of Parsons. It is challenging to talk about it because Parsons spans 130 years, so you really have to break it down into time periods as well, like the early years when Charles Parsons was alive. He founded the factory and called it Heaton Works in 1889. He passed away in 1931, but within his lifetime, he saw the steam turbine generator installed in all power stations in the world, or major power stations anyway, and the size of individual units increase from 7.5 kilowatts to 50 megawatt capacity. Then we have to think about World War II era and Claude Gibb, and then the rapid expansion of the business. After that, you get into mergers and acquisitions territory. Rayrol Parsons was formed in 1968, which took over Clark Chapman to create NEI in 1977, Rolls-Royce in 1989, and finally, the 1990s. The company was bought by Siemens. Siemens did, however, name the site Cap Works as a mark of respect to Charles Algernon Parsons. Today, the site still designs, manufactures and services turbine generators for power stations as part of the global Siemens family. This podcast goes into some basic detail about the company's achievements, including many of the machines which were the world's first, the world's largest, the revolutionary machines that were made in Tyneside. There are a lot of unique and very impressive facts about C.A. Parsons that people perhaps don't realise, and there are thousands of people, especially in the Newcastle area, who have relatives that work there. The factory has employed entire families, grandparents, parents, sons and daughters. It has provided employment for thousands, spanning 130 years, and it was all started by one engineer, Charles Algernon Parsons. In 1888, Charles Parsons decided to build a power plant using steam turbine generators, and in January 1889, founded the Newcastle and District Electric Lighting Company to build stations which would use his machines. Forth Banks was the first station near Central Station. The machines produced 75 kilowatts. In 1889, Charles opened Heaton Works. The factory had 48 people and covered 2 acres. Now, it is impossible to go on and list every machine ever made at Heaton in 20 minutes, but here are some of the highlights. In 1891, Parsons supplied the world's first condensing steam turbine generator, a 120 kilowatt machine, to Cambridge Lighting Company. Importantly, this was the first turbine generator to equal the performance of the best traditional steam engine. The Cambridge unit still exists, and you can see it in the Science Museum in London. 1894, Parsons designed and built turbinia. After solving cavitation issues associated with a propeller, in 1896, turbinia became the fastest ship in the world by a large margin. In 1897, Parsons formed the Parsons Marine Steam Turbine Company to put turbines into ships. In 1895, Manchester Square Power Station in London ordered a 350-kilowatt turbine machine for their power station, which solved the problem of vibration and noise complaints from local residents caused by their reciprocating engine machines. This became very well known among UK power companies and opened the floodgates for more orders with even bigger machines. Turbinia then exploded onto the international scene during the Spithead Review in 1897, sparking a revolution in marine propulsion. If you listen to podcast 4, you can hopefully learn how Parsons used Turbinia to demonstrate the benefits of using turbines over reciprocating engines in ships. 1899, the site had expanded to 8 acres, and 1900, Parsons installed the two 1,250-kilowatt units in Elberfeld in Germany, which resulted in more orders in Europe. 1902, Parsons designed a 1,500-kilowatt machine for Neptune Bank Power Station in Newcastle. The next year, steam machines were installed at Carville A Power Station, also in Newcastle. By 1904, steam turbines had completely superseded reciprocating steam engines for electricity generation in new power stations. By 1910, the Heaton site was 11 acres. 1912, the world's largest machine made to date, 25 megawatts, was ordered for the Fisk Street Station in Chicago. In 1913, a higher rated version of the Chicago unit was supplied to Lott's Road in London. Also in 1913, Parsons became a private company with Sir Charles as chairman. His only son Algernon was appointed a director after having undertaken a full apprenticeship. Now, if you listen to podcast 1, you'll already know Charles' father was a keen astronomer and had built a large telescope in Ireland. So Charles used that knowledge from his father and made mirrors for telescopes and searchlights at Heaton. So during World War I, obviously a lot of the men had gone to war, including Algernon Parsons, so women were brought into the factory. Parsons was made a controlled establishment, and in the Victory Book of 1919, the list of items made by Parsons for the war effort includes propelling machinery for 5 destroyers and 9 patrol boats, main gearing for HMS Witherington and 2 patrol vessels, turbines for HMS Champion, Royal Oak and Cordelia. Then the land-based machines include 100 steam turbines, 30 alternators and dynamos, 41 compressors and blowers, 56 condensing plants and 76 sets of gearing. In addition, 8,287 searchlight reflectors. Following the war, Parsons went back to business as usual, and in 1919, there is a very well-known photograph of horses pulling a machine which is described in the company booklet as 47-ton generator stator being conveyed through the streets of Melbourne to Newport Power Station. I just mention that because it's a very well-known photo. In 1920, staff numbers had risen again to 1,400 and the site had expanded to cover 18 acres. 1922, a huge 50-megawatt machine was ordered for the Crawford Avenue station in Chicago. 1929, the site had grown again to 25 acres and had a staff of about 1,800. 1930, three 50-megawatt machines were ordered for Dunstan Power Station in Gateshead. Now you'll know where that is because it's now the Metro Centre. In 1931, Sir Charles passed away and his wife Lady Catherine Parsons died soon after in 1933. His only son Algernon had been killed in World War I and his only daughter Rachel was living in the South pursuing a different career path. There were no grandchildren. So, fast forward to 1937, Parsons saw an order for 2 50-megawatt machines for Bunurong Power Station in Sydney, Australia. These machines were Parsons' first full-speed 50-megawatt sets. 1939, staff numbers had risen to nearly 3,000. So then we turn our attention to Sir Claude Gibb in World War II. Claude Gibb is a full 20 minutes in itself, but basically he can be credited with having probably the most important effect on C.A. Parsons, the company, after Sir Charles. During World War II, Parsons carried out the production of machinery for naval vessels, fast cargo vessels and tankers. They produced welded gun cases, engine frames, bed plates and machined parts for tanks, field guns, rolled strip cartridges and aircraft. In addition, they manufactured complete large searchlights. C.A. Parsons developed the UK's first industrial gas turbine starting in 1937. The machine ran for the first time in December 1945, and it is preserved by the Discovery Museum in their store at Beamish. They also developed the world's first gas turbine-powered tank. In 1947, the company converted to a public company and was expanding rapidly. Machines were increasing in size, 30 megawatts, 60 megawatts. In 1949, Parsons won an order for a 100-megawatt machine from Ontario Hydro in Canada. The Richard L. Hearn Station was being built to supplement the hydropower of the province, and Parsons ended up supplying all four of the 100-megawatt machines by the end of 1950, the largest two-cylinder tandem machines made in the UK up to that time. In 1953, Parsons designed and manufactured turbine generators for the world's first commercial nuclear station at Calder Hall, and in 1955 for Chapel Cross. Of course, it didn't stop there. The machines for Canada went up to 200 megawatt and 300 megawatt for Ontario Hydro in the late 50s. The first British machines of these ratings to be exported and commissioned. And it didn't stop there. In 1958, C.A. Parsons won the order for Thorpe Marsh, the largest turbine generator in the world, 550 megawatts. In 1959, tragically, Sir Claude suffered a fatal heart attack on a business trip. And at this stage, I'd like to quote Jeff Horseman, the company's chief turbine engineer, who is currently writing the history of the company and has been a huge inspiration to me. Under the leadership of Sir Claude Gibb, the company grew threefold in size and subsequently reached a peak of 12,500 employees. Sir Claude also saw the importance of developing machines for nuclear power generation, gas turbines and other technologies. This led to the creation of many daughter companies to develop these technologies, consortia to build nuclear power plants, and companies to build the materials and components which were needed. This helped maintain Parsons as one of the world's leading turbine generator companies. In 1961, the company received an order for four machines of 500 megawatt output for Ferrybridge in Yorkshire, one of the most powerful generating stations in Western Europe at that time, and machine number one became the world's first 500 megawatt single line turbine generator to go into operation. HEPC in Canada placed an order in 1965 for the first two of eight 540 megawatt sets for Pickering Power Station, and that station went on to have the global reputation of producing more electricity than any other nuclear plant. I also need to highlight the 660 megawatt units for Drax and Hunterston at this time. When all six machines were installed into Drax, it became the largest power station in the UK and was Europe's largest coal-fired power plant. The most powerful turbine generator sets which Parsons built were four units of 800 megawatts for Bruce A Power Station in 1969. By 1970, eight 500 megawatt machines were ordered for Nanticoke, the largest coal-fired power station in North America. So just to remind ourselves that following the death of Sir Charles, machines had grown in size from 50 megawatts to 800 megawatts. The technology goes on. Currently, we have a blend of fuel sources, wind and renewables, gas, coal, nuclear, and companies like ours are researching the latest developments for power generation all the time. In a world where the demand for power goes on increasing, our highly skilled engineers are constantly rising to new challenges, adapting to changes in the market, and still making the products which make electricity available. Perhaps to end, I'd like to go back to Jeff Horstmann. Jeff Horstmann summarises in one of his presentations as follows. Sir Charles Parsons pioneered the development of the world's first steam turbine generator and the marine steam turbine. To do this, he overcame many challenges. This included producing designs which enabled machines to run at very high speed, raising their efficiency to exceptional levels, establishing companies to develop and manufacture turbine generators, finding financial backing, developing new manufacturing methods, and promoting the new technologies to an industry which had never seen them before. He was successful in this and saw the steam turbine become the dominant engine for power generation. He continued to push the development of turbine generators until they produced very high power outputs, a major step which enabled electricity to be provided to everyone, not just the privileged few, at affordable prices. In addition, I would just also like to mention there is a Facebook page called the Parsons Heritage Project. Now, on that Facebook page, if you join, you'll see several different topics which you can have a look at and see hundreds and hundreds of photographs. We have former employees, we have photos of the factory, photos of power stations, photos of the Parsons family, photos of Turbinia, Parsons Marine, Grubb Parsons, Burr Castle, which is the ancestral family home, the royal family visiting different Parsons facilities, and finally the 2018 grave restoration project at Kirkwellpington. I hope you'll go on and join it because the photographs are just absolutely astonishing and people keep adding to it all the time. There are far too many machines for me to talk about here, far too many achievements for me to list, but I hope that that gives you an insight into how C.A. Parsons were the world's first, the world's largest, and provided revolutionary machines and are still there in one form, still doing some great work and still making electricity available to everybody. Thank you for listening.